Well, my guest in the studio has achieved international recognition as a pianist and composer in both jazz and classical music. As a jazz pianist, he's toured extensively in Europe, Russia, Asia, the US, Australasia and the Pacific, performing at major festivals and working and recording with some of the art form's most distinguished international figures, while releasing many international acclaimed CDs. Mark Isaacs, welcome.
Thanks very much. Good to be here again.
I think it's been a couple of years.
It's been a couple of years.
Yes.
Oh, actually, it might have been early last year, you know. Maybe not quite as long as that.
You called your new band Resurgence.
I have indeed.
Mark. And I looked that up. It means to rise again. Why did you call it Resurgence?
It's funny. I wasn't really thinking about... Well, I'm about to launch the Australian version of this band, and it's my first public performance in 6 months. And so people are saying, oh, gee, is that why you're sort of making a big comeback after sort of being out of this, off the performing scene for 6 months? But funnily enough, that wasn't really in my mind at all. The song Resurgence, which is one of the tracks, actually I wrote it about 4 or 5 years ago. And more about 2 years ago, I decided to make it a title track. And then it sort of panned out that I feel like a little resurgence is going to happen on Friday night at the Sound Lounge when I get together with this new band. So, you know, you can have all the meanings you want, you know. But a few things are coming out there from the past and from the future and the present. So it's all together, I think.
You described your palette as leaning towards the lyrical, impressionistic and introspective side of music, but you're also fascinated by earthy, rhythmic music.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe the sound of the new Australian band Resurgence?
Both.
Both?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely both. In fact, a nice balance of both in the sense that I think the last project I was here talking about was a CD called Visions, which is
a trio CD,
which the sort of brief of that CD generally was to explore the introspective. And this new material and the live version, the recorded version, really has a sort of a balance between the two. I feel, I think my projects have mostly either been completely exploring the lyrical or sort of like a, you know, 60-40 or 65-35 split towards the lyrical. But this one is about 50-50. It sort of seems, it's sort of quite balanced in that sense. You know, you get a slow track and you get a fast track, and it's, to put it in a banal way, but there's a definite sort of feeling of moving, ping-ponging around across the spectrum. So this is a band where I can get some energy stuff out and I can do some reflective things too.
And how would you describe its accessibility compared to, say, Visions?
Oh, I've got no idea. I'll wait to see.
So it's still experimental?
I'd never think about those things, to be honest. No, I don't think it's experimental. You see, to be honest with you, I think everything I do is completely accessible to everybody. You know, that's the way I feel, you know, but not everyone's going to feel that way. But it's not my place to sort of, it's like putting the cart before the horse for me to talk about. Look, my music, I don't think any of my music is experimental. I'm one of the most melodic people around. I write pretty melodies, I've pretty harmonies. You know, I think my music's always been accessible, but it depends where you are sitting. For some people, anything that doesn't have a singer is not accessible, let's face it. So, I can't comment, only to say that the grooves here are quite modern. There's a bit of R&B in there, there's a bit of soul in there, there's a bit of jazz in there. Yeah, I mean jazz in the sense of swing, although not in the Australian version. There's only one track on the American-Australian Coalition. But look, I think it's music for anybody to come and hear, you know. So, look, I think all my stuff is accessible, to be honest.
James Muller on guitar there, joined up with yourself and obviously these guys in LA.
Mm.
Jay Anderson, he's played with, well, he was an ex Woody Herman guy, wasn't
he? Yeah, and Joe Sample, and he plays with Maria Schneider now and Bob Minzer. He's really a fantastic in-demand bassist, fantastic musician, great guy. And it's my second collaboration with him. I collaborated with him in 2002. We toured Europe and Australia in a trio with Adam Nussbaum. And We did about 11 gigs in Europe and about 4 or 5 in Australia. And the very last gig we did was recorded live at the Basement. And that came out as my CD, Keeping the Standards.
That's right.
So I'm sort of renewing my rapport with, and it's very much a rapport with Jay on this. And James is, of course, collaborated with on two previous CDs, Closer and On Reflection. And then the new guys, some wonderful guys, though. There's two saxophone players actually on the CD, as well as Steve Taviglione, who we just heard. There's Bob Shepherd, who's just an incredible player. He's played with Chick Corea, and amongst others, and just a great musician. And Vinnie Colaiuta, who will be here shortly. Oh, he's a stellar drummer, and he'll be here shortly with Herbie Hancock. So it was a fantastic team, and I call it a sort of Australian-American coalition that doesn't got no connections with a political context in Australia. And it's just still a good word to use, coalition, because it does represent what was going on there. And we the Aussie sort of rocked up. I had my sort of Australian music. It's my compositions, an Australian producer, Australian pianist leading the whole thing, and a fabulous Australian guitarist. And then some pretty amazing American guys sort of interpreting what was there already, the music on the table, you know. So that was the idea of that project.
Mark, are you still a curator of the Brisbane Powerhouse?
Yeah, the jazz program. Yeah, I curate the jazz program there. I think last time we spoke, I sort of curated my first festival there.
Yeah.
You were about to, actually. Yeah, I've done two since then. I'm going on to the fourth one at the moment. So it's an ongoing thing. It's been great.
That's been rewarding?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. It's really great to contribute I contribute my knowledge of players that are around, both touring internationally and Australian players, and they're just a fantastic team in there, and we work well together, and we're doing some good things, some exciting things, and trying to put Brisbane on the circuit for the people that are moving around the place, the region, not just moving around Australia.
Now, back to James Muller. You've chosen him for this recording and also for the band, but listeners will know that your uncle was the great guitarist Ike Isaacs.
Absolutely.
How highly do you rate the guitarist James Muller?
Oh, extraordinarily highly. I visualize him in so many contexts. I've recorded with him. He's been in quite a few of my bands, and I want to compose for him. I'm actually planning a piece next year which is going to be written for classical players and jazz players, and he's the sort of guy I want in there with me as the sort of representing the jazz side of things along with the classical players. I just think he's an extraordinary musician and composer, not just guitar. If you ask me about James, I've got to really rate him as a guitar player and a composer, because he's both, and he's fabulous at doing both. And his music has probably influenced me as much, if not more, than anybody in jazz. Now, did you notice I said in jazz? I didn't say in Australian jazz. Mm. I just mean in jazz. I had a lot of influences. See, I've only known James for the 10 years. Mm. We sort of started working together in 97. But I would say in this last 10-year period, because my seminal influences were, you know, Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock and Keith Jarrett and all the players I listened to. But as far as a player who's really made me sit up and listen to him or her in the last 10 years, anywhere in the world, I would put James Muller first and foremost. You know, I mean, he's much more interesting to me than Brad Meldow, for example. I just pulled one name out of the hat, yep, because that's somebody who I think is a fantastic musician.
Held up there.
And has, you know, made a lot of... has been a big influence on people, and rightly so. He's an incredible musician, but James, for me, I'm much more interested in his music.
Well, that's certainly consistent with the superlatives that I hear of James, speaking with your contemporaries.
Yeah, I know I won't be a lone voice on that one.
Mm. Now, last time you were on the program, Mark, you were, which is nearly, as we mentioned, nearly 2 years ago, you mentioned a concern about the reluctance of people to experience live music because of your term cocooning, or increasing the ability of people to be able to enjoy live music events beamed into their own lounge room, yes, via DVDs or even cable. Now, what are jazz musicians doing to keep up with, or indeed, what are they doing to get on this bandwagon?
Well, I think most of us are doing quite a bit in the sense that certainly we aren't ignoring this information revolution. I mean, all of us have websites and we link to... places where our CDs are available, whether that's our record company websites or Amazon or whatever. So, you know, if, for example, somebody said tonight, oh, I heard this interesting musician, Mark Isaacs, on the radio, and they could put my name into Google, and then my website would come up, actually comes up on the first thing that comes on Google, which is good. And then from there, they'd be able to link to buy CDs. They'd be able to find out about what gigs I'm doing. They'd be able to find out. I also have a blog where I keep up-to-date news about what's going on. But what I'm talking... I think that none of this replaces live performance, though. This is just a means it's a networking and it's a promotion thing. And we're lucky we're living in an era where, you know, you can, people, you know, you don't have to walk around with a sandwich board, or you don't have to sort of take out expensive ads in the newspaper. You have this ability that you can let people know. You know, I use email lists, as a lot of us do, you know, to so people get regular emails, not just from me, but from the organizations that I play for. They'll get emails. So all this has been used. But what I was talking about with the cocooning is that actually it's replacing the need for people to go out and hear live music. And that's actually the end point of a long process that just started with television. Well, I think it's actually started with radio. You know, people could stay home and listen to music on their radio. Then they could watch shows and movies on their televisions. And now they can, you know, they've got very big screens, a lot of people, and they've got stuff that they download. And so what I'm saying is the incentive for people to go out and hear live music. I know bands used to play six nights a week. You know, they get a residency in the 50s. It was common, particularly in America, but also in Australia, to have a residency, because people would come out every night to hear some music and to dance. People are working longer hours too. They're also exhausted. So they come home, they've invested in this $5,000 plasma screen, and they're going to sit home and watch it.
Put on a concert of, I don't know who, Chick Corea maybe.
Whatever. Yeah. So, you know, in a way, live music definitely is suffering from this, but it's a little, these things are often touted as the death of things, you know, like the, you know, TV was supposed to be the death of the movies at the movie theatre, but it wasn't, you know. They have an influence. They maybe, you have to scale down a little bit and your expectations, etc. But at the same time, nothing replaces anything else completely, you know. They just sort of added things. So, you know, I mean, I embrace all these various means of spreading the word. I think jazz musicians have to do a lot of it themselves. You know, very few of us, except those at the very highest level internationally, or in Australia at the very highest level in terms of public recognition, like James Morrison or someone like that. Those people would have, you know, management taking care of business for them, but everybody else is just doing it themselves.
That's right, you know? Beating the drum. New York-based Sydney pianist Sean Whalen recently wrote to the Premier of New South Wales outlining concerns about the lack of live music opportunities and venues in Sydney. In Australia, how incumbent on the government is it to ensure that opportunities for live music are available?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that where I've noticed there's an issue is with it's come up with licensing laws in Sydney, where some of the government regulations. I mean, I don't think it's the government's responsibility to directly ensure musicians are working. What I see is that the government does support the arts. Governments, I'm talking state and federal governments, and actually of all persuasions. I haven't seen one or the other really decimate the arts funding. So governments support music through direct arts funding, but there's also issues of licensing. I've noticed that in Sydney. I don't think it affects a lot of the venues that I play in, but it does affect other musicians, I think, who want to work around town a lot and maybe play a lot of different pubs and things, and it's very expensive for them to get a permit to have live music in that pub. So I certainly think. But Sean's letter was a little, where I think there was this particular thing, and I did read Sean's letter. Actually, you kindly forwarded it to me. But Sean was talking about the fact that there was a government-owned institution, the Conservatorium, that had some very nice performance spaces that basically weren't being used in the evenings. And I think you made a very good point. And particularly in relation to jazz, there's a very nice place there called the Jazz Cafe. But it's basically sort of something that students play in the day. But it's not used a lot at night, and I think some of the costs were a bit prohibitive. So he was making the point was, why not sort of find a way to sort of make this a bit more viable as a performing institution? Well, we're not exactly overrun with places to hear live jazz in Sydney. It's quite a desert out there for listening venues.
I just thought we'd make mention of some of these great musicians. Matt Keegan is one of the new members of your band on saxophone. Mm-hmm. We've had him on the program once or twice over the years as well. He's a fantastic saxophonist.
He is, and he's a great guy, and he's very supportive and warm and takes a lot of trouble with the music, and he plays it great. He's great to have on board. I really only had one rehearsal with him, But I know that all that from the first rehearsal.
So it's
we're having another rehearsal on Thursday, and then we hit the debut of the band on Friday.
So it's going to sound very, very fresh.
Oh, it will.
And Tim Firth, new boy.
Yeah, a great young drummer who's recently come to my attention, because he's recently come to everybody's attention. Mm. He's really sort of burst onto the scene, and I'm very excited about playing with him. I like playing with people, and at that sort of point, I was playing with Felix Bloxham sort of in early 2004 when he was sort of just blooming all over the scene, and it's a good time to get together with people. Sometimes then they get too busy, or they go to LA like Felix did. I'm grabbing Tim while I can.
And Brett Hurst, the bass player?
That's a relationship that goes back a while. I've played a lot with Brett since he came here from Christchurch. I toured with him in 2000, a national tour, and haven't recorded with him. And he was in my trio a bit after that. But we haven't played for some years, actually. So it's a bit of a reuniting thing as far as Brett goes.
And, of course, James Muller, who we've already discussed. Mm. And really, so good, James Muller. Well, that's the band Resurgence. What you're trying to achieve, I guess, is the all-Australian version of what occurred last year in LA.
Absolutely. With some new material. We do a couple of songs that were done, we recorded in LA, but most of it's actually new material. And, I'm trying to keep... It's the same instrumentation. I've chosen the players with the same sort of thoughts in mind, the sort of players who can do the different things. A lot of this stuff... Actually, in this band, it's not really about swing. I've played a Latin thing and a sort of groovy blues thing. It's more about those sort of rhythmic feels. But I still need the players, say, in the drums, who can play those idioms but still have the flexibility and responsiveness of a jazz player. And, Vinny... of course, has that, and Tim's got that, and all the musicians around me have got that. And and the other thing is, with my trios, I like to play standards, but I like to play originals with bigger groups like quintets, where I can do some arranging as well. So this is if people come on Friday night, they hear the sort of composition and arranging as a huge part of it, as much as anything else.
You mentioned last time we spoke that you find yourself editing yourself much more these days as far as your composition are concerned. How difficult was it to put this new repertoire together?
Oh, it was hard work, but it was very rewarding. I just set out to, it doesn't sort of appear, in a couple of days. It is sort of, it's a bit of a struggle sometimes, but... I think it's also, as you get older, you've got more behind you. You've got more backlog. And if you don't want to repeat yourself, just recycle things. If you want to sort of keep it fresh, it's actually a little harder, because you sort of got the weight of what you've already done. And it's very easy to sort of just, I don't know composers who do that. They keep regurgitating the same piece, really. If you want to keep it interesting, it's not that hard when you're 20, because it's all fresh. Whatever you do is going to be...
Yes,
it's all... You scratch your head and it's fresh, But I think this is a process. I've spoken to other artists that as time progresses, it's sort of, in a way, it sort of becomes harder, but it's actually the rewards, I think, are greater.
Heal Thyself. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is a little bit of a sort of bit of a departure for me, but in terms of people who know me well but wouldn't think so, because I've always enjoyed sort of gospel and R&B type things, and it's not something I would necessarily do in a trio, but certainly there was a bit of that on that Closer album I did. But this is particularly, somebody said to me, this is my this is the first thing I've done that seems to them like a single, like it's really kind of punchy and accessible. You use the word, and I'm coming right around to it.
Yep.
If you're going to ask me about accessibility, this would have to be the most accessible thing I've recorded, I think.
Well, thanks very much for coming into the studio tonight, Mark
Pleasure.
Isaacs.
Great to be here again.